Hello, and welcome to SearchContentManagement.com's expert podcast entitled Common Challenges of Cloud-Based Collaboration Projects and How to Avoid Them. I'm Jonathan Gourlay, site and news editor for SearchContentManagement.com at TechTarget, and I'm joined today by Tim Walters, a partner and principal analyst with Digital Clarity Group, a research and advisory firm focused on digital content technologies. Previously, Tim was a senior analyst at Forrester, where he published research on web content management, collaboration, intranets and employee portals, and the digital workplace. He also studied and wrote about portal server technologies and globalization practices. Tim also has experience covering the web content management space as well as SharePoint and works with clients on employee and consumer engagement practices and technologies. This podcast grew out of a webcast entitled First Steps Toward Mobile and Cloud Collaboration, Building a Business Case and Getting Started. Tim will address the common challenges of cloud-based collaboration projects and explore ways to avoid the pitfalls and manage effective implementations on an ongoing basis. First, I just want to say welcome, Tim, to the SearchContentManagement.com podcast booth.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us today. I want to get started by mentioning that cloud collaboration solutions are getting a lot of attention recently, but enterprise collaboration has been around for quite some time, hasn't it? I mean, I ask that because I wanted to know what limited the success of those earlier efforts and what has changed to ignite renewed interests in cloud collaboration.
Okay, that's a great question. It's a perfect place to start. So you're quite right. You know, enterprise collaboration as a software category and as a knowledge management practice has been around for, you know, 20 years or more. In the terms of team rooms and document sharing and communication practices as alternatives to email, for example. And while it achieved success with many firms, there's no doubt about that. It certainly was not a massive failure. I think it's fair to say that it didn't have the degree of impact that many hoped or expected from it, nor did it necessarily pay back the very large investments that some organizations or many organizations made in those enterprise-wide collaboration tool implementations and rollouts. So there are many reasons probably for that shortfall, but quickly, one, first-generation enterprise collaboration was relatively heavy. So certainly relative to today's cloud solutions, it was very heavy, of course. It was an enterprise application. That meant a lot of the things that we take for granted we used to take for granted anyway, in terms of enterprise applications, such as, you know, relatively high license cost, big infrastructure behind it, long implementation periods, very IT intensive and IT reliant. That is, IT has to be more or less involved in the day-to-day maintenance and even management of it. Significant training, major change management hurdles, and so forth were all attendant to that first-generation enterprise application. And secondly, it often reflected, you know, what we now would recognize as top-down thinking about how work should flow. So it might reflect organizational hierarchies and reporting structures rather than, to take an extreme example, rather than supporting more free-form networking effects that we now believe are more productive within knowledge work and can be better supported in the second generation tools, which are often cloud-based. So in terms of what changed, you know, what's changed to make account for the renewed interest in collaboration / cloud collaboration, again, very quickly, the work environment has changed. Workers are increasingly remote or mobile, or for other reasons outside of the office. They work in dispersed teams. They more often need to work with others completely outside of the firewall, that is, with partners or even with competitors in a co-optician context. And finally, in this regard, the massive and completely unpredictable impact of smart mobile devices has truly made work a thing that you do, you know, just about anywhere and just about any time, much to our dismay, perhaps, rather than a place that you go. And finally, second, the nature of knowledge work is changing, and or we have a better appreciation of how knowledge work needs to be supported. So enterprises have done a pretty good job of routinizing predictable, formalizable business processes in BPM and so forth. And what's left over is the messy stuff, the human-based, ad hoc, unpredictable knowledge, what I call knowledge processes, following Jeffrey Moore. And we're just beginning to understand how to better support knowledge processes. They're often very poorly supported today. And cloud collaboration and social tools can be a very important part of addressing the friction points or the gaps in the support for those ad hoc knowledge processes.
Makes sense. I wanted to ask you about the disruptive forces and how these technologies that make the new cloud technologies possible are feeding into they're becoming the very forces accelerating the pace of work and change and forcing the need for more collaboration. So it's a cyclical challenge from all sorts of directions. What are the common challenges of cloud collaboration?
Yeah, I think it's a very important happy coincidence or elective affinity that you've pointed out. So, you know, the various disruptive forces, there are many, but faster processors, cheaper storage, cloud platforms that offer, among other things, utility pricing, for example, smaller, smarter, faster, better devices. All of these things are challenging traditional work structures and the traditional pace of work. So there's this massive acceleration in the pace of work and in the speed with which we need to make decisions, therefore the speed with which a business process has to arrive at a conclusion. And at the same time, those disruptive forces enable the more flexible, adaptable, and less expensive solutions, again, usually in the cloud, that can help us address those challenges. So there is this interesting, I mean, it's not so much an interesting kind of relationship. The two are intimately related. If we didn't have the kind of technology acceleration and transformations that we've seen, we wouldn't have the need to address transformations in the workplace to the extent that we do. And those technologies allow us to address those transformations precisely by enabling faster, more responsive, and less expensive solutions to be introduced into the workplace. So when we're looking at the common challenges of collaboration, then it's virtually identical whether you're talking about cloud collaboration solutions or on-premise-based solutions, and the processes are wrapped around those. So there, you need to address things like, do I understand my workforce? The significant segmentations and differences between different parts of the workforce. Do I understand their workflows and what kinds of friction points or gaps exist within those workflows? Will the proposed solution be more better enough, so to speak? Now, that's a crazy formulation, but I use it to highlight the fact that it's been very clearly demonstrated that a new tool or process has to be not just better than the current way of working, it has to be lots better if it's going to appeal to most people as something that they want to, you know, invest the time or the effort or the psychological resources into adopting it, right, to making a transition to it. And it's even more complicated because what counts as lots better can be different for different people. So, for example, the app just runs faster. You know, it doesn't get hung up as often, and that's great because I'm really tired of sitting there waiting for the screen to refresh. So I'm going to use this tool rather than the old one. Or it has fewer steps in the process, so it saves me a lot of time and I can get a particular piece of work done more quickly. Or the performance is about the same, and it doesn't really have that many fewer steps, but it's just better looking. It's a lot less frustrating. The drop-down list makes more sense. It's just simply, it's more pleasurable to use. And so forth. There can be many, many different ways in which a proposed collaboration tool will appeal to an individual worker as something that is measurably better, significantly better, so that they will be motivated to adopt it. And that means that from the perspective of managing the uptake of those tools, you have to also try to be aware, if you can, of those various motivations and how you can manage or anticipate or market to those various motivations. And then finally, from common challenges of collaboration, you know, there are the other mundane issues that go with just about any kind of knowledge management or knowledge-centric initiative. You know, do you have sufficient executive commitment, let alone budget? Do you have evangelists in the, you know, in the line of business who are going to be out there promoting the use among their fellow employees because they just they love it for one reason or another? Do you have proper internal marketing campaigns so that you can really, succeed with the transition from the new from the old practices to the new and so forth?
Are there special security considerations that remain as sticking points with regard to cloud collaboration among geographically dispersed team members?
Yeah, so this gets back to the question of the common challenges of the cloud. And, you know, I want to be a little provocative on this one because I've been thinking about it recently. And and the reason I've been thinking about it recently is Forrester, I think. Somebody came out with a new report on cloud collaboration and usage. And it was reported on fairly widely in the industry press. And the thing that most people highlighted in the report, when reporting on the report, was that there's still significant or meaningful resistance among CIOs and other executive leaders to cloud technologies because they are cloud. And I think two things about that. One, I have this feeling, I think I could prove this if somebody challenged me on it, that it's very interesting that the set of anxieties and hurdles and roadblocks that used to be thrown up by certain executives or certain people within an organization with regard to open source, that is, the companies are new and we can't really trust them. Do they have sufficient enterprise experience and commitment? Who's ultimately responsible for taking care of the stuff? Where is it going to go? Right? And so forth. Is it secure enough for us? Bottom line. That set of anxieties is rarely attached to open source so much anymore. And it has migrated almost en bloc to the cloud instead. It's like we have to have someplace to park this set of anxieties, and currently it's parked over in the area of the cloud. And my provocative way of challenging on this is, what I want to say is it's time for CIOs to drop their security blanket or let go of their security blanket and kind of grow up into the cloud, something like that. And the question is, if you look at the cloud collaboration, let alone the other cloud content and usage scenarios. If you look at cloud collaboration, can we point to 1, 2, 10, 20 significant security issues from organizations using cloud-based collaboration? I don't think that we can point to very many. I'm not familiar with very many. So I don't think there have been and a worrisome number of actual security problems with the cloud. Of course, you can imagine things. But then, secondly, we're knowledge management professionals. Our job is to manage these issues. So if you think you can identify a potential security issue with cloud collaboration, so, for example, will I be able to properly identify the people who are signing on to the system? That's a challenge. That you should go and address that if it's possible. Is it possible to address this issue? Probably it is. So we make sure that our Active Directory is properly tied in to the cloud system so that we can identify people securely before they sign in. If it can't be addressed, then you have a genuine security issue. But so far, I'm not aware of those kinds of things popping up.
Okay. With regard to the consumerization of IT, how can organizations get a handle on managing self-provisioned collaboration tools so it doesn't become an insurmountable task?
Yeah, this is really important. So on the one hand, self-provisioning is a godsend for IT, and in my perspective, because I like to say that no one knows work better than the workers. So we've spent many years, decades, really, working from the perspective of, again, a top-down perspective. Let's go and, certainly we'll study the workers, we'll interview them, we'll ask them to give us their input, but will then determine what are the requirements for a new system, how they're going to address certain workflows and so forth, and they'll basically create that system and then roll it out for the workers to use. Nothing inherently wrong with that, but now we have a potentially much better supplement, at least, to that process. Namely, the tools are so inexpensive, often free, that workers can go and provision them themselves, can just begin using them. I can sign up for a Dropbox account or a Box account or an iCloud account or a Huddle account, at least for, you know, initial usage, absolutely for free. And even if I want to sign up for more storage or more functionality, it's $14.95 a month. It's $30 a month. People will pay for this with their own credit cards if they're frustrated enough with a work process. And so people are going out and self-provisioning these cloud collaboration tools. And that means, you know, from the perspective of IT managers or knowledge management professionals, you've got an incredible opportunity to just, like, go and observe how workers are trying to put Band-Aids on their own problems. So identify where people are using these tools, where they've self-provisioned these tools. Understand very clearly, why have they done that? What's the issue? What are they trying to address? Does the tool address it? Right? And if so, you've basically got a petri dish in which you can begin to run experiments, controlled experiments, because the workers, you know, again, are just trying to get the job done. They don't really care if it's the most efficient thing or if it's precisely the right tool or if another cloud technology would be better than the one that they've chosen. They're just trying to get the work done. But from our perspective, you can enter these kinds of self-provisioning scenarios and really use them as a kind of petri dish in order to run experiments and understand exactly what is the issue and how can it best be addressed. Now, what you want to avoid, however, is letting that self-provisioning get entirely out of control. So you need to avoid a Wild West scenario where you've got 20 people in the marketing department are using Dropbox for file sharing and the other 20 people are using Box. And they can't share files between the two systems, right? You know, it's like too many tools spoils the broth or something. So you want to encourage and learn from employees' own efforts, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to let it get completely out of control to the extent that the multiplicity is inhibiting true collaboration.
Then does it make sense to get ahead of the game by rolling out a single enterprise-wide tool in most cases?
When you put it that way, I think I could confidently say absolutely not. Because the dynamite words here are get ahead of the game and in most cases. So we can never, this entire area, most areas of knowledge management for that matter, are so differentiated between types of firms, firms themselves, different offices within a firm, different workflows within a given office, and so forth, that you're really asking for trouble if you say, in most cases. And secondly, getting out in front of something implies, again, let's select a technology. Maybe we've done a lot of input and done our homework, but let's select something, and then we'll have the employees use this. Maybe it will be the right tool, maybe it won't, but more importantly, I would resist a third element in the question, a single enterprise-wide tool. I think that we're now getting to the point where we understand fairly well that enterprise-wide is not the best way to go, almost period, but at least initially. And again, it goes back to the question of not rolling out a collaboration platform and then having people figure out how to put it to work. So now I've got this tool, how can I use that to help myself do my work? Rather, it's probably much more efficient if we go about it the other way. What is my work? What are the problems in my work? Where is my work process and the knowledge processes within that poorly supported? What tool can I use to address those things? And then you're looking for a specific answer. So I can't reach decision makers in a workflow because they're sometimes out of the office. Well, what do we need to address that problem? We don't need an enterprise-wide collaboration tool. We need to make sure that those decision makers have mobile devices that can run the given enterprise application and execute the decision within that workflow, right? It's a very specific tactical approach rather than this broad enterprise-wide strategic approach.
Okay, that makes sense. And, you know, we hear about great starts to cloud-based efforts, collaboration efforts that seem to languish from time to time or fail over time. How do you avoid that?
Yeah, we hear about this all of the time, right? So you'll see a very substantial and you know, gratifying from the point of view of the champions, gratifying ramp up in adoption, in usage. And then after a time, often a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months, probably at the most, it drops off extremely radically. I call this the lemming curve of Enterprise 2.0 adoption, because it really is just like running up and then falling off the edge of the cliff. And it's pretty easy to explain once you get outside of the, you know, the disappointment of the actual initial adoption and then lack of adoption. And that is that, again, you look at it from the perspective of the workers. So the organization comes along and says, hey, we've got a great new X. Let's just say for the sake of argument, and I have to pick on somebody here, so excuse me. But let's say it's Yammer. Okay? So Yammer is most simply thought of as corporate or enterprise Twitter. It's a short message, a microblogging platform in which you can write something. And you could write a lot of things in there. You could ask a question. Hey, I'm working on this report. Does anybody have a reference to, right? Or does anybody know somebody who can help me with? So it's an expertise. You could use it to find expertise. Or you can simply share ideas, right, and so forth. Or, you know, share knowledge. You know, here's a great link. Here's a link to a great report. You guys should read it too. Or I just heard this story, et cetera. So it's basically like Twitter. The organization comes along and says, hey, now we've got Yammer. It's available. Here it is. Go right on it. You don't even need any training. It's just like Twitter. And what will happen is that people will take some time out of their day, and they'll go and they'll begin using it. And it'll be interesting because it's different. And it'll be interesting because I'm talking to people I've never talked to before, and I'm sharing information with them. And there will be a great deal of adoption, typically. And then again, after a couple of weeks, you'll find people that a primary topic of conversation is, okay, how do we actually use this to do work? You know, now that we've had fun with it, now that it's new and interesting, that was okay. Now, how do we actually put it to work? And if you can't answer that question, then they are going to abandon it. Because in the final analysis, if you ask a worker, would you rather spend an extra 15 minutes at work every day using our new social and collaboration technology, or would you rather, you know, go home 15 minutes earlier? They're always going to want to go home 15 minutes earlier. In other words, nobody's going to invest in collaboration or social for the sake of doing it. They do it because it actually helps them get their work done better, more quickly, more productively, more efficiently, faster in the final analysis. So you have to address that issue. How, you know, and it's almost a what's in it for me issue, although I think it's a little more complex than that. But how does it help us do work? And if you can't address that issue, and it's much better if you address it up front, then you're always going to have this kind of lemming curve drop right off the edge of the cliff when people determine that the tool you're offering them actually just distracts from their own work.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Tim, thanks very much for talking to us this evening.
Jonathan.
That was Tim Walters, a partner and principal analyst with Digital Clarity Group, with some great insight into the issues surrounding mobile and cloud collaboration initiatives. You can learn more about collaboration and other content management topics at searchcontentmanagement.com. Thanks for listening today. I'm Jonathan Gourlay.